Welcome to the USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast. USCHoops.com College Basketball Podcast is the original podcast covering USC Trojans men's college basketball team and is available on such platforms as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, and TuneIn, as well as at the USCHoops.com website. If you haven't done so already, we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a five-star rating and left a review on the platform of your choice. Happy Friday, everybody. This is Chase, as always, joined by Nick. Nick, how you doing?
Doing great, Chase. Great to have the basketball season underway, and we'll certainly break down these two USC games here.
And I hope everyone enjoyed our new intro. Maybe that works. We'll see. We had an old intro before in the old days before Nick joined that it required me to do editing, and then so that it would delay the release of the podcast. So we've kind of just been using Zoom and getting the podcast out the door really quickly. So maybe we'll go back to that. So we're recording this as we're coming down the stretch, last 7 minutes to go. Michigan State and Gonzaga are playing on an aircraft carrier in San Diego. Gonzaga is the number two team in the nation. Michigan State unranked to start the season. Michigan State has a 3-point lead. Any just quick thoughts on this as we're watching this game go by, Nick?
Yeah, you know, Gonzaga just doesn't have the juice that they used to. Even with Timmy, like, you know, once they lose him after the season, you kind of wonder about their status as a superpower long term. They did get Dusty Stromer in the upcoming class, but they don't have any other like blue chippers coming in. And Tommy Lloyd certainly is stealing some of their market share on the international market. So I kind of wonder about how their program is going to look in like 3-4 years.
Yeah, you know, they've managed to always get like, you know, one or two guys that kind of been like, you know, really NBA players that have propelled them that are kind of like surprise NBA players, like Brandon Clark, mm-hmm. who was a San Jose State transfer. They're not currently on this roster other than Timmy, and we'll have to see how it goes going forward. But we discussed them in an earlier podcast, so I guess we can start with the lows and the, you know, not so lows on USC basketball. Pretty horrible. I mean, start to the season, losing, decisively to Florida Gulf Coast on Tuesday, the opening day for college basketball. And yeah, it was ugly. We could talk quite a bit about it, but it was a bad loss.
Yeah, horrific. Nothing good came from that game either. I think like literally there were no positives that I could take. Now Alabama State, we'll talk about that too, but they just look like a high school team. So I don't even know what to take from that game. But with the FGCU game, Josh Morgan, I guess, is the lone positive.
Yeah, Joshua right? Morgan was the positive. And maybe Malik Thomas for the last 3 minutes of the game. You know, that's it.
Morgan did. He looked bigger. I mean, he was really dominant as a rim protector in that game. So there is that. The added weight seems to be helping him. Although like they didn't really feed him, so there wasn't a post threat all game. They switched towards that a little bit in the Alabama State game, but that Alabama State team just had no size either. So it doesn't seem like that'll be a durable strategy going forward. I was really concerned with the rebounding. I think like they just with lack of size and with Morgan kind of going for shot blocks, they really struggled, especially in the first game. So they're really going to need these guards to rebound moving forward.
Yeah. So like, let's unpack this piece by piece. Cause when you lose at home to a team like Florida Gulf Coast by whatever, 15, 17 points, whatever it was, there's a lot of things that have to go wrong. So, I mean, we're going to start let's start beating the dead horse. We ended last season, and what did the both of us harped on over and over and over? You need to get a point guard. Now, as the summer wore on, first off, we obviously missed every possible opportunity in the transfer sweepstakes as the season ended to find that point guard. The most notorious being Darian Trammell, who ended up at San Diego State. Now, I've heard that he had a really juicy NIL deal with them, and that may be a case. Maybe SC wasn't properly set up at the time, but we should have anticipated that. We should have been on that. I think you just put Tramiel on our team on Tuesday, and there's a much greater chance that we just win that game because we're able to kind of like execute a basic offense, which we could not do. The Florida Gulf Coast guards has effectively disrupted everything we try to do on offense. So we had the entire offseason to find a point guard, a major problem within our personnel, and it was never addressed. I hate to say that. Now, everyone shifted focus after the transfer season came and went, and it became look more and more like SC was going to get Isaiah Collier, who's like the number one point guard, if not the number one player in the class of 2023, which is amazing for 2023, but it's not going to solve any issues for this season. And the kind of compounding our lack of focus was Silas Demery, who's another kind of point guard who we got. So we're bringing in the guards for next season. We're going to have a lot of help for next season, but that lack of a point guard to me is going to be a factor. We're never going to be able to escape from that this entire season, in my opinion.
Yeah, definitely agree with that. And then, you know, we've talked about this a lot just with USC's NIL improving and in a much better place now than it was throughout the offseason. So how much of that do you just attribute to wanting to clear the deck for Isaiah Collier versus we just couldn't compete against these other teams NIL-wise at the time when the portal was open?
I do not think it was about clearing the deck for Collier, because I don't think when that was going on that there was a perception that we would need to clear the deck for Collier, because while he was considered kind of a top 30 overall player, very prominent point guard, he was not considered Isaiah Thomas of his class or something. That he wasn't going to be like the number one overall player as a point guard. So I don't think that was a major consideration. I think there are two factors. I think NIL was a big factor. And then I've been told back at the time, there was an issue relating to current personnel on the team. We have a lot of guards. We have a lot of guards on the team, some upper class guards too, who worry and who want to have the role of kind of the lead guard. And they worry about loss of playing time. And quite frankly, there's a lot of, you know, it's hard to get playing time when you've got that. So many of our players are so similar in what the skills they bring to the game. In fact, Bogey is really not all that different of a guard than is Malik Thomas. Malik Thomas is not a ton different than Trey White. Trey White is not a ton different than Reese Dixon Waters. Waters is not a ton different than Kobe Johnson. I mean, there are a lot of players who are very similar type players on our team. You know, like Ozaiah Sellers, a little bit different because, you know, he's not quite the same size and he's more of just a pure jump shooter. But, you know, the rest of those guys are all kind of same profile. And unfortunately, they all kind of lack the natural ball handling skills to really kind of execute an offense. So I think it was part NIL and part just internal personnel politics. I hate to say that, but I think that's part of the case. And maybe our attempt to transition from a program that relied so heavily on transfers with the Evan Mobley team to a program that, hey, we're going to give our high school recruits a shot. You know, we're going to give them an honest shot and keep them around. I think there's merit to that latter thought because you're already starting to see, like, for example, Malik Thomas, who I think a lot of people were ready to give up on. I was ready to give up on midway through the Florida Gulf Coast game, but you're starting to see some green shoots with him. Like, okay, maybe he could actually score at this level. You don't want to give up on him, and he's got a lot of time left in the game. So I can see that being part of it. And then there's the elephant in the room, which is how much of it was just kind of like, you know, Andy getting a big contract extension at the end of the season. And just, well, you know, it's important, but if NIL money's not gonna just drop in our lap, us, you know, kind of being proactive about it when the school is kind of a little bit up in the air about what to do about it. Maybe I'll just kind of not do anything and just wait to see if this stuff worked itself out. It's, you know, so I think it's a combination of those factors. I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on this?
I don't. It is just disappointing because we clearly lack that ball handler. You know, on the bright side, though, it does seem like we've got a lot of pieces for next year's team. I'm still pretty high on next year's team, especially if they can add maybe one or two key transfers. I think that team's looking like it could be really, really good. And, you know, we have seen some positive flashes out of our current freshmen. So the NIL was good enough to get the freshman class that we did. And certainly with Trey White, I think especially, you're seeing that he could be like a really good player kind of by the end of this year and into next year.
Yeah, I mean, Trey White's looking is already looking. Look, he had 9 rebounds the first half against Alabama State, and we discussed Alabama State is not exactly a powerhouse. But I guess we can, before we get to that, let's just finish off, I guess, our thoughts on the Florida Gulf Coast. Yes, the rebounding was a huge problem as well. You know, the defense, the initial actual like half court defense, free rebounding was actually pretty strong. I think, what did Florida Gulf Coast shoot? Do you know, on like first shot attempts for the game? I think it was like right around 30%. So
yeah, it was a good half court D for sure. No question.
And we also, I think we forced like 8 turnovers or 8, sorry, 8. We had like 8 steals. So we played, the defense was pretty good until, you know, came time to rebound. And then, you know, on offense, the offense was just a complete disaster. We talked a little bit about the fact, you know, you're not going to get a like a post game with Joshua Morgan, and at least right now, not from Kajani Wright. And we'll talk about, I want to talk about him a little bit too. But the problem is, I think we kind of already knew that, right? We kind of went in thinking, okay, well, that's not going to be available to us, so we're going to have to like make do, and we're going to have to rely on these guards. And the problem is, like, it was just a very odd kind of like, we basically couldn't get into an actual running an offense like the entire game, which was just really strange. And we finally got a little bit against Alabama State, so you got to see a little bit what we can do on offense. But it was a lot of one-on-one play, guys trying to go, you know, make individual plays, just wasn't really working out. And one observation I have to say I had, especially against the Florida Gulf Coast guards, you know, Boogie has clearly put on some muscle, but he is heavier than he was last season. And I went back and watched some highlights of him playing last year. He looked quicker last year. He looks less quick with the ball, at least against Florida Gulf Coast. Now, I know he came back the next game and had like 7 steals, but he did not seem to move as well as he had as he had last season. Reese Sticks and Waters, who had some injury issues in the offseason. You know, I think he's just like a naturally thick guy. If you remember, when he came in straight out of high school, he was thick, and he kind of like got thinner for last season, but he kind of like thickened up again. So to me, and I don't know if you have an opinion about this, but to me, both of those guys look a little too heavy.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's definitely hurt them in the dribble drive game. And, you know, they had to settle for so many threes in that first game, and they just didn't make enough of them, right? Like the shooting was really poor, and when they don't have the guards that can break a defense down off the dribble, you know, and you can't get offensive rebounds because you're too small. You're just not going to score very many points. So I think that's exactly what happened.
Yeah, so we can talk a little bit about Alabama State, which was a nice bounce back game. I mean, Alabama State's quite frankly really, really bad. Thoughts? Any thoughts on having, you know, the coach's son, leading scorer, gets 2 fouls in the first 2 minutes, and then his dad sits him for till halftime, and Alabama State goes into halftime down 25 points.
It's giving me flashbacks about Isaiah Mobley last year in a few of those games. It's a terrible move, right? The auto bench after 2 fouls, especially when you're an underdog too. Like, it's more justifiable if you're like a clear favorite. It's just, you know, you see so many times when, you know, a player gets auto benched with two fouls at some point in the first half, right? And then they finish the game with two fouls. And I can't remember how many fouls that kid ended the game with, but, you know, time and time again, you see coaches do it, and I just don't understand it.
So. Well, and it, at some point, right, when your team is like, okay, you're down by 8, you're down by 12, you're down by 15. Okay, what point is the game like statistically almost like impossible to overcome, and you still have this guy, you're still preserving him for the second half? Certainly by the time you hit 25 points or over 20 points, you should be thinking, yeah, we're on the road. We really need to get our best player back on the court. Now, in fairness, after he actually played in the second half, it wasn't really apparent to me he was their best player. But I don't know if they had a best player. So, you know, my thoughts on Alabama State, look, we were able to get into our offense a little more. Obviously, the Alabama State guards could not disrupt what we were doing nearly as well. And that, you know, that led to just a slew of like wide open 3-point attempts, which we actually knocked down. The 3-point shots we had against Florida Gulf Coast were far more contested. I mean, it makes total sense that we shot so much better against Alabama State because the looks were just much, much better. The ball moved around more, not perfectly, but more and better. You know, I like what I've seen from both Trey White, who, you know, had 9 rebounds in the first half against Alabama State and seems to play with a lot of intensity on both sides of the court. Isn't quite ready to hit a lot of his outside shots, but is playing with the kind of intensity you need to at this level. And I have to say, Malik Thomas, I kind of surprised that I'm actually liking him, but I have to say that he is able to, he did it a couple times yesterday. He's able to make some of his moves in the half court and kind of drive to the basket without over dribbling, which is like, that's kind of been a problem, especially not only with Drew, who really tends to over dribble, with Boogie. Reese is not a great kind of slash to the basket, find a spot guy. He's more of catch and shoot, or, you know, one bounce and shoot, one dribble and shoot. Malik actually made some nice slashing moves and did not over dribble, was very kind of efficient with his handle. He can't hit the mid range yet, but he'd hit it in high school. So I could kind of see a possibility where Malik over time, if he can start hitting like his mid range shot, I think he could actually be a pretty decent scorer at this level. Will you have any thoughts about that?
I do. I'm still concerned about just like his overall like body type and game, like translating to efficiency, but I do think like he could be a good late clock guy with like 5 on the shot clock. You can ISO himself into a decent shot as opposed to, you know, one of our other guards just throwing up some contested garbage. I think his like late clock could be a little bit higher percentage than some of our other guards.
Yeah, and this is actually, I was talking to somebody else about this today. I mean, one of the big differences between like Boogie is like a much better natural 3-point shooter than Tajidi was, but the difference for Tajidi was he was so efficient with his handle that he was great late shot clock score. And we talked that, you know, we talked about that ad nauseum when he was on the team. Boogie really doesn't give you that. He kind of can't really line up his shot in a super efficient way, get himself open like that for like a step back jumper late in the clock, mid range. I can see Malik maybe getting to that point. We'll have to see. Yeah, his body type is weird, right? Because I don't know how tall he really is. I think he's listed at like 6'4", 6'5". He's clearly not that tall. But
6'2", maybe.
6'2", yeah. Very thick. Doesn't jump very much. But on the other hand, he can play a little bully ball, you know, and he did both games, he had like nice pump fakes around the basket. So that might work for him. Just depending, by the way, as we're talking here, Gonzaga is a 1-point lead on Michigan State, under 2 minutes to go. So we'll see how this game works. I'm assuming Gonzaga is going to win here, but this is a really close game. So, what other takeaways do you have from these first two, your thoughts?
Yeah, just want to make one kind of like last quick comment about just the late clock thing, to put it into context, right? So like you and I, we're both big stats guys and we both love efficiency. And I think we've made that very clear, but there is value to that, right? Like, that's why you look at the Lakers with Kobe Bryant. Kobe's not, he was not an efficient player, right? Right. But then, you know, you look up and he's got a bunch of titles, right? Because the Lakers late clock with like five on the shot clock could, you know, throw it to Kobe and he'd shoot a pretty good percentage on a contested fadeaway, like much higher than some of these other guys, even in the NBA, right? So there's definitely value in that at all levels of basketball. But I actually, and you may disagree with me on this, I think that Gold Coast team's actually decent. You look at their personnel. I know they lost to USD in their next game, but that USD team really isn't bad. They've got, you know, a bunch of transfers from high major programs, including Eric Williams, who we've trashed on the pod before. And like, they've got Jaden Dallaire. They've got a kid who scored like, you know, decent amount at St. John's as well. And a kid who was like 19 a game at Denver University. So, but that Gold Coast team, like that Isaiah Thompson kid was transferred from Purdue, and they've got some guys. Like, I don't think they're going to be like a top 100 KenPom team or anything like that, but I could see them as a top 150 team.
I agree with that. Yeah. It's plain as day. There's no way like they were like a number 300 KenPom team, because we saw what like a number 300 KenPom team looked like in Alabama State. Yeah. Florida Gulf Coast was, you know, obviously better. Particularly, I mean, they were really, you could really tell they're better. That their guards put on defense were just quite is much better disrupting the, you know, and knowing how to guard at this level, which the Alabama State guards didn't know how to do.
Yeah. Right. Right. So I wouldn't be shocked at all if that team like won the Atlantic Sun this year or something. Doesn't make it a defensible loss by any means. Like you're at home too, but I can kind of tell like in the second half, you know, once we got down four, like it kind of felt over, because that Gulf Coast team, they were playing harder than us. And you could tell like we didn't have the horses to come back. But it definitely feels like we don't have our rotations figured out yet at all. And it's just going to take some time before we can kind of get the engine fully up to speed. And the question is, like, do we have the talent level without Vince Iwuchukwu to finish in that top half of the Pac-12? I think we do, like, we have the talent, but I'm just not sure that we can get there just with all the unknowns. Do you have any kind of thoughts on that?
Well, look, I think the problem is we have the raw talent, yes, but the problem is we don't have talent at the places you most need it. The most important position on the court is point guard, and we don't have one. And that's particularly an issue when you're lacking a, like, you know, legitimate inside scoring threat, right? So even when, if, you know, Vince comes back, you know, he's going to score two ways, really. He's going to score putbacks, and he's going to score on pick and rolls. And the problem with that is I'm not sure who's going to do pick and roll with him, because you know, Boogie has really struggled with that. You know, maybe it will be Drew. I just watching that game against Florida Gulf Coast, it's just, you're wondering like who is going to be the guy that kind of like calms everyone down, takes control of the offense, makes sure everything's working okay. Now, look, different times last season, that was either Drew's role or Isaiah Mobley's role, right? I don't know who's going to be able to do it this season. Maybe eventually it's like someone like Trey White. I don't know. You know, there's interesting, you know, possibilities there. What are your thoughts on, you know, two games we've seen from Kobe Johnson? What are your thoughts on what we've seen there? Because he started both games.
I think he's scrappy. Like he's a good guy you want to have on your roster. I don't know if he has the skill level yet to like feel great about him as a starter. But he's clearly pretty active on D, gets his hands on a lot of balls, and has kind of like those D'Anthony Melton traits, even though he's not quite the player that D'Anthony was. He is like legitimately big though. Like, you know, Melton was a guard. Like Kobe's legit, like, you know, I think he's probably 6'6", and he's got some length and pretty good anticipation. So the thing with him is you need to like consistently have him cutting, and you need to have consistent ball movement, because if you get into this half court game where guys are just standing around and looking at each other, he's just going to be a total black hole in your offense.
Yeah, and that's, I guess, that's the point. Like, he was actually able to do a couple of things against Alabama State when he cut to the basket. But if he's not, I mean, I don't think he's only scored so far, right, like on layups. He has, you know, he hasn't hit his threes. And then, you know, when he's been charged with kind of doing the ball handling, you know, he just couldn't do it against Florida Gulf Coast. Those guards just really overwhelmed him. So, I agree. He is scrappy. He does interesting things on defense. But I wonder if he's more of like a luxury personnel piece rather than like a central one, and whether or not we need to start, especially with our kind of rebounding issues, if we need to start thinking about moving Trey White into the starting lineup. I have a feeling that's eventually going to have to happen. Maybe I'm wrong about that, but I just think unless we get like Vince back, I think that's the direction we're going to end up going, is my guess. The other thing to talk about too, I guess we haven't, what are your thoughts on, you know, two games from Kajani Wright?
Yeah, I think he plays hard. He just doesn't really have the skill level where you can throw it into him with any kind of confidence. You know, you definitely need him as a depth piece just because we're so small otherwise. But I don't think he's done anything to like eclipse Josh Morgan in the rotation or anything like that. And I do think he's kind of more of a pure five, unless the jump shot, you kind of show something there that we haven't seen yet. So,
well, that's actually, you know, where where I think I'm going to disagree. Because of the jump shot, but I've been impressed with the way he's moved on the court. He actually looks pretty agile to me, and not that he can score like Isaiah Mobley from the perimeter, but I think he might be able to guard opposing fours, you know, I'm kind of surprised that he's been kind of as coordinated and agile. I thought he'd be stiffer. That's why I guess I thought he'd be as, when he showed up, he'd be stiffer, and he hasn't been as stiff as I thought he was going to be. That's just my thought. I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I do think Isaiah moves like a little bit better than him. And then like where I kind of get worried, right, is even Isaiah got cooked by Jaime Jaquez in that matchup, right? Like,
I'm not suggesting he's going to guard Jaime Jaquez, but like, maybe you ran one of the, you know, can he guard Tabellus? Maybe. I don't know. I mean, maybe he could. I don't know. Tabellus might work him.
I think you need to play him in that matchup, right? Because then you're going to have like, if you got Drew Peterson at the four against Arizona front line, and like you're in for a long night. I think it's just like you've got all these different questions with the roster right now, and I just don't think they have the horses to compete at the top of the league. But you know, they are young, and like, let's say Trey White, you know, figures out how to shoot, right, then that's like a really interesting piece. And I guess I'm intrigued, but still kind of sour from that first matchup, and need to see them against like a legitimate team to kind of buy into them with, I think, where we are at with them in the preseason.
So Gonzaga just beat Michigan State by one. Speaking of, you know, is Vermont a legitimate enough team? I mean, they're kind of a top 150 type team, right? They've been,
If they like beat Vermont by 15, I'd be pretty impressed. I don't see that happening, but you know, I've been wrong plenty of times before.
Yeah. So. And just for reference, if we're going to play, play this game, St. Mary's beat Vermont by 26 last night. Okay. So I guess just really briefly, just looking at next season, you know, I'm not 100%. I agree this team is young as it is right now. I'm not 100% sure that we need a transfer for next season. Maybe we do. The four position could be the interesting thing if getting more scoring from that. Yep. I don't want to pick on any college player, but I'm not convinced Harrison Hornery is playing at the right level of college basketball. I think it's going to show up here, in my opinion. So, you know, we're going to have to figure out what we do at the four. Will Kajani kind of be able to take that, play that position? We saw like a minute of play from Niagu, the Russian player. He's very skinny. way skinnier than Visar from Arizona. So it's way too premature to kind of make any judgments about him, but he does look skinny. So I don't know what to take from him. So you know, next season goes, I could see us putting together, you know, a pretty legit team without needing transfers. You know, we have Collier. I think one of the issues, like, who, I guess you have, if you have Collier, Trey White, you have Reese is not really a two guard. He's kind of got to play the three. He just doesn't have the handle for the two, but Trey White does. And then, you know, Vince and, you know, maybe Malik, maybe some of these other guys, you know, I don't know. I mean, I think there's something there potentially.
Yeah. Yeah. I think like transfer wise, first off, I think like almost all like really good teams have a high level transfer. It's really rare to do it all organically. So some of that is me just speaking from past good team, like archetypes. But I do think you can use another guy at the four, right? Like I'm not like sold that like Aaronson Page is going to give you like major minutes on a really, really good team as a freshman. So I think like if you lose Vince, like you definitely need a guy, right? If he doesn't come back. And even if he does, like you're talking about Vince, Kajani, and Aaronson Page in there.
Well, we still have Joshua Morgan, right? So
I guess he does have another year, right?
He has another year. Yeah. I mean, like Morgan's looked pretty good. So, you know, there's a scenario next year where you actually have Vince and Morgan playing. That's like kind of an odd lineup, but you know, it would be nice to have, like a four who could go inside outside, kind of like Isaiah did, but maybe with a little more kind of athleticism. And we don't really have that right now, fortunately. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe Kajani becomes that guy, right? Like maybe if he like kind of perfects his body, right, improves the shot, then he becomes more of a four, and you can kind of see him and the archetype of Isaiah Hicks in North Carolina back when Roy Williams played two bigs, and you can get away with that, right?
Yeah.
But you know, if he's gonna need to shoot, right? Like fours in this game at least need like a respectable mid-range jump shots to keep defense honest. Defense is honest just because, you know, they can just pack it in otherwise and make it really, really hard on your guards. So
yeah, no, 100%. Okay, we're coming up here on 7:30 when 7:30 where I am. It's 6:30 on the West Coast, 9:30 on the East Coast. USC is playing Colorado in football. SC is 8-1? 8-1. And Colorado is one of the worst. Yeah. They did win a game, but they are one of the worst teams I've ever seen. And they're playing at the games at the Coliseum. I guess before we get out of here too, before we turn to that game, where are we at some of these scores? North Carolina, I saw they pulled it out. So they're going to win.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Villanova's down 2 seconds left.
Yo, well, we lost you for a second. Villanova's up by Temple.
See, at Temple's a tough place to.
Yeah.
Yeah. They're up two with 50 seconds left against Temple here. So probably going to survive. But I don't want to say it's an underperformance, because Temple's a really tough place to play, and they've got battle back now, kind of as we saw last year with those guys.
Yeah, and he has 21 points.
Stanford is down five against Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, really good player, right? Stanford's down five with about eight to play against Wisconsin. Baylor is only up eight against Norfolk State at the half. That's a little bit low for them. We got South Florida beating Auburn by nine at halftime.
Yeah.
Auburn, we have coming to LA pretty soon. So that's disappointing.
Yeah.
You've got Tad Boyle coming off the five-star commitment of Code One.
Okay, so we have lost Nick here temporarily. And I will try to find that Colorado score here. Alabama is beating Liberty, which is the favorite in the ASUN, which is the conference Florida Gulf Coast is in, and they're up by 9.5.
Can you hear me?
Now we can hear you. I just gave the Alabama Liberty game. What's the Colorado game score?
They are down 14 to Grambling at the half. Grambling.
Wow. Yeah. So that's their SWAC game, right? So
yeah. SWAC's not so fun for the Buffaloes.
That is unreal. Oh, it's a road game. They're at Grambling. Okay. Well, there we go.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, slightly more defensible, I guess, barely. But still pretty unbelievable.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. Thoughts on any? Okay. So here's the only question I want to know. Oh, Georgia's losing by 14 with Wake Forest.
Nice.
Okay. Any chance that, interesting. There's BYU San Diego State is on tonight. Interesting.
That's fun.
Or okay. Oregon, UC. There's a good game. Today's like the first day with like decent games. UCLA, yeah. Long Beach State. Oregon, UC Irvine. Okay. How many points is USC's defense going to give up to Colorado?
Oh, gosh. 24?
You know, I literally was going to say 24. I'm going with 24. Really? Yeah. Okay.
I have it as like a 50 to 24, I think.
Okay. Okay. So we'll have a pod next week certainly before the UCLA game, because that's going to be a huge game. I never want to write off any game, but USC playing at home under these circumstances against Colorado, hard to imagine that C loses. So these last two games are going to be really important for SC. I just have to say, like, officially, I don't think it's like a good thing necessarily that SC would try to, you know, would be in the mix for the college football playoff. But for that to happen, SC would have to beat UCLA, Notre Dame, and Oregon. And if they did that, I'd be like, okay, well, you know, I guess they deserve it, but I don't think that's going to happen or anything close to that. Just the defense is just not there yet. Although the offense has really played magnificently this season. So credit.
So two comments with that too. Like, I totally agree. Like, if they swept those, you know, I think you want to see them in the playoff. And I'm definitely not a believer of like, oh, we don't want to make the playoff because we would get smoked by Georgia. No, I think you always want to make the playoff. Like, if you make the playoff, you're two games away from the national title, and who knows what can happen. And it's also after signing day now. So, like, even if you get embarrassed, it's not like you lose a ton of recruiting momentum heading into signing day. So,
no, point well taken. I guess yeah. I was just, to me, I guess I was, maybe a better way to say it is, I'm not expecting I'm not going to be like, oh, we didn't make the playoff, this was a disappointing season.
Of course.
Yeah. So to me, look, if we can beat, we win tonight, we split Notre Dame and UCLA, even if we lose to UCLA, but beat Notre Dame, which I think is a, you know, decently likely scenario. I think this would be a tremendously successful season. Now, I know it will be on par with your prediction for the season. You know, I don't even think that you probably anticipated that we'd struggle this much on defense, but you know, the offense has been really good. And Caleb Williams has really come around as funny, because he got this huge NIL deal in the offseason, but like, you know, he had to work his way through and get the hang of the offense and the hang of everything. And he's really played well the last several games.
He's been outstanding. I think he absolutely should be in the mix for the Heisman. If you look at his numbers, they're just ridiculous. The touchdowns, interceptions, and he's shown up in the big games. I mean, the Utah game was a big test, and even though they lost that game, like, he was absolutely spectacular. Now, my comment on, like, you know, wanting to make the playoff or not, it definitely wasn't directed at you. I just see so many fans on these message boards saying, oh, no, we don't want any part of Georgia, right? Like, that's I think that's nonsense. I mean, like, even if you go and get smoked, like, who cares? Whatever, right? Like, you're two games away. It looks like Temple might actually beat Villanova here. So they called a foul on Nova with 1 second left in the tie game and put Temple on the line. So
I was looking for that game and turned on to USF Auburn too quickly.
So we'll see what happens there. I also think, and we're taping this right before the USC Colorado game, and maybe I'm gonna look foolish, but I think that 34.5 line is crazy with our defense, right? I mean, that seems nuts to me. What do you think?
I agree. Because if we both agree that we're going to give up 24 points, we have to score 50. Maybe we will, but it's like, how do you expect a team to score that much?
No, 100%.
Little trivia before we leave for the week. Okay, so right now, as it stands right now through the season, Caleb Williams is actually just barely over 300 yards a game passing for USC. Who is the only USC quarterback to have a season where he averaged over 300 yards per game passing?
Okay, maybe this is before my time. I would probably guess like Rob Johnson, but you know, again, that's just, you know,
it's funny you would guess that. Okay, that's interesting. Yeah. I know the answer is actually Carson Palmer, his 2002. But yeah, that's a good guess.
He was a big like empty stats guy, right? And he just threw for a ton of yards. And
yeah, well, his kind of mediocre. The big knock on him was how many terrible. So Temple hit both their free throws with 1 second to go.
Okay.
The knock on him was just how terrible he was at taking sacks. He took all these really really bad sacks. Now he had Keyshawn's first year at SC, and then he also had some really good receivers that played for him, so that helped put up some big stats. Temple won the game, by the way, knocked off Villanova. Right, we better get out of here for the week. Any last thoughts before we go?
Fight on tonight against the Buffaloes, and really great to have a football team that's about to be 9-1.
Yeah, okay, fight on, everyone.